KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody says show business, really, all right, like, he just isn't crazy.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, we go to the Toronto International Film Festival and find premieres, press junkets, and parties galore. Plus, what's in a movie name? But first, the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by my banter buddy, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Kim of the Hollywood Reporter trade publication or news magazine?
Is it a
lifestyle
trade publication?
Choice?
Or
what
is
do we
a
call
consumer
it?
Publication? As I've said on the air before, I am relatively new at the Hollywood Reporter, an editor at large, and we have new management, and we have Janice Min, formerly of Us Weekly, at the helm, and what the plan is to cover the industry in a way that will be interesting to people in the industry and also broaden it out to appeal to consumers who are interested in the entertainment world. Hopefully there
okay.
are a few of them.
Kim, I'll pretend to be a potential advertiser.
Yes.
Why is this going to work? Why am I going to advertise in the Hollywood Reporter, and what is the void that you are going to fill that Variety or maybe some of these entertainment websites are not currently filling?
Well, I can tell you what the CEO of the company that bought the publication says. And he says that he thinks a lot of these other products are not that good. And I think that Janice feels that we could certainly cover the industry in a more engaging way. Now, of course, John, you and I know, bottom line, what works in journalism in this digital revolution? I don't know. I hope something, because, you know, we kind of have a need for information to be responsibly assembled and packaged. But we are hoping that this will be the prototype of the magazine is absolutely beautiful. It's an oversized glossy. There will be a website that will handle breaking news, and it will be much broader than what you might necessarily consider traditional trade news. But at the same time, we are going hard at information that is of use and of interest to people in the industry. So
does that mean we're going to see less news about Lea Michele's driving habits?
John, that is so small of you and so wrong. No, you're going to see aggressive news coverage. And I think you're going to see celebrities covered when it's worthy, hopefully. And we're going to see the executives who make these decisions and the talent, the directors, the producers. We're going to try and make it interesting. And, you know, I was looking at her prototype. I have to say, there was something about it, even though it's very chic and sophisticated and everything, there's something sort of old-fashioned about it. It treats Hollywood as if Hollywood is Hollywood. It's something that you almost don't see anymore, because there's been a depressed feeling in journalism and a depressed feeling in the industry. And I think this publication is going to be something that a lot of people will want to have their clients in, a lot of executives will want to be in themselves, because it's a very striking showcase. It's quite good-looking, and people will be seeing it in the next few weeks. And I'm going to be a business reporter, which is what I've pretty much always been. So that's what I'm going to continue to do.
And it sounded like there's a lot of business to cover in Toronto.
There were
a lot of film deals. I don't know if there were any like $5 or $10 million deals, but it sounded like people were spending money on movies they cared about.
Yeah, there was quite a number of deals. As we record this, they're still popping up for films like Sony Pictures Classics sewed up a deal for Barney's Version, which is a film with Paul Giamatti. Robert Redford managed to get a deal for his film, The Conspirators, which, of course, as you know, is about the Lincoln assassination.
Nothing says box office blockbuster like Mary Surratt.
Yeah, she ended up on the wrong end of a rope, but maybe this will be a sympathetic telling all. I'm not sure how.
That's a good tagline.
Yeah, I should sell that. And the 3D film Caves of Forgotten Dreams, the Werner Herzog movie, sold, which is something that people are going to want to get a look at. And, you know, Harvey Weinstein was there and buying.
Yeah, he bought Dirty Girl for a reported $3 million. It's a coming-of-age film. I think they bought the World War II film Sarah's Key, and I think they bought another coming-of-age movie, Submarine. So it does sound like of all the companies that were active at Toronto, the Weinstein Company was back in force, kind of like maybe the Hollywood Reporter.
I don't know if they were spending millions of dollars, but they were certainly spending some money. So, you know, the takeaway seems to be that the independent film world has hurt but is not to be written off just yet.
No, and also I think we should mention that Fox Searchlight, just before Toronto Start, bought Tree of Life, Terrence Malick's new movie, rescuing it from Apparition, which was Bill Pohlad's distribution company that is no longer. So as some companies go away, others step into the breach and buy movies. So we have some reasons to be optimistic.
And Fox Searchlight was there with a bunch of films, including Black Swan, the Darren Aronofsky film that we talked about last week. And of course, one of the big functions of Toronto is to launch awards movies. And you know, John, when you go to a film festival, a lot of times these movies come out with this sort of giddy, woo, it's going to be great, because these people are film lovers and they give standing ovations. I can't tell you how many people said, my film got a standing ovation. And I felt like, yeah, get in line. Everybody's film is getting it practically. If your film doesn't get a standing ovation.
If it's in focus and it's projected on a screen.
Right.
And it's also important that even though there are a lot of movies that sold at this year's festival, it's not just a sales market. I mean, it's a launching pad for publicity, for awards momentum. And I think it felt like there were a lot of movies that came out of Toronto with more momentum than they went in.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. As John and I were just discussing, a big industry cohort migrates north to Canada this time of year for the Toronto International Film Festival, or TIFF. This year, I went too. Every September, movies are premiered, parties are thrown, and publicity is generated. Some films are looking for distribution deals. Others have deals in place, and they're looking for awards buzz. One of those movies is the Fox Searchlight film Conviction, which opens October 15th. Conviction had its worldwide premiere at the festival, and Fox Searchlight brought the cast and director to town to promote it. Based on real events, the film tells the story of a sister who fights tenaciously to free her brother after he's convicted of murder. The movie has strong performances by Sam Rockwell and Hilary Swank.
My brother Kenny, he's been in prison for 12 years, life without parole.
Well,
I'm going to find a way to get him out.
Mom!
The morning after Conviction had its premiere, I did something that I've never done in all my years covering the business. I attended a press junket. That's where a ravening horde of entertainment reporters assembles to interview stars and directors in grueling assembly line fashion. I made my way to the Park Hyatt Hotel to talk to Conviction director Tony Goldwyn. I was given a 15-minute slot, and as I waited for my turn, I wandered the hallway and took in the scene.
So I'm at this hotel where it's eerily packed in the halls, and on the doorways there are signs that say things like Juliette Lewis and Shia LaBeouf, and these stars are in the rooms. They are just doing one interview after another. There are regional reporters from all over the country, and they are waiting in the hallways, literally, to have their few minutes with the talent. There are so many handlers managing the talent and the flow of talent. A hamburger just arrived from room service, and one of the handlers said, "I have to cut it up for Juliette." So I assume that means that Juliette Lewis doesn't want to be trying to devour a big hamburger while she's doing press interviews.
Once it was time for my interview, I was ushered into a room where director Tony Goldwyn was seated on a chair. A publicist seated herself discreetly on the floor beside the door, keeping her eye on the clock. Goldwyn's directing credits include A Walk on the Moon and The Last Kiss. He's also a working actor. In fact, when he came to Toronto, he was on a short break from the musical Promises, Promises on Broadway.
And just today, how many reporters have you talked to?
I've no idea. I think how many have I talked to? Five or six so far. It's what time is it? 11:15. Yeah.
And you've been at it since what time?
Oh, 9 o'clock.
Oh, so it's not uncivilized.
No, very civilized.
Now, Just describe for us a little bit of the process of getting your film here. Did you make the film with Fox Searchlight behind it, or how did that work?
No, we made this film, Conviction, independently. We raised the money, financed it independently, and then last year showed it to distributors, and Fox Searchlight was my first choice, and so we showed it to them very early, and they liked it and wanted it, and so we made a deal with them, and we all felt that the Toronto Film Festival was the ideal launch for it, because it's going to open in theaters on October 15th.
So you get here, and then what happens when you arrive?
Well, let's see. First thing I did was a photo shoot. Went up to the roof of the hotel and did a photo shoot, then ran across the street to do an interview for, I think it was a website, a movie website, then went down to the lobby of the Four Seasons and, you know, met some friends for drinks, and then went out for a celebratory dinner with the people involved, our writer and the people whose true story it is, her family, and, you know, and then the next day we started early doing interviews one after another. We did a press conference with the whole cast. We did roundtable press interviews and on camera interviews talking about the film. And then yesterday we had we go and got changed and dressed for our premiere, which was at a big theater, the Elgin here, and we had 1,000 people, whatever. That was very exciting. We got a standing ovation, and then we do a Q&A after for the audience, and then went out and had a dinner, and came up with a big party last night that Fox Searchlight threw.
Right, and I was there.
You were there?
Somehow yeah. I did not see you.
Right, well, there were a few people there, and I can left kind of early. I'm currently also doing a Broadway show, so I have to kind of protect my voice a little bit because I have to sing on Broadway. So that was really loud, that party.
So here, you have the cast here, right?
Yeah, we have a lot of the cast. We have Hilary Swank, Sam Rockwell, Juliette Lewis, Minnie Driver, and Melissa Leo are here from the cast.
And then as you're here, do you find yourself talking about other films that you have or want to make with people? Are you sort of doing business on the side?
I don't have time to. No, I mean, really focused on this. I guess some people do that, but as a director or an actor, really, you know, where you're always doing interviews, you don't have time to do that. I mean, sometimes I've been at parties and people chat you up and stuff like that, but I've kind of learned that this isn't the place for me to do business. Because when I talk to people about projects, it's got to be a serious conversation. You know, you can hand lots of cards and let's do business together and let's do this project. I'll send you the script. But this environment is so frenetic. It just is not, for me, it's not conducive to doing business, because I'm not into making deals. I'm into developing movies, you know, so that just is you need to be a little more calm and zen and have a little more breathing room to do that.
Let me just ask you a final question, I guess. Have you been asked egregiously stupid questions by the press? hoping present company is not to be included.
I haven't, not in this instance. People, you know, I have in the past on other junkets. So far, you know, people seem very interested in our film and have you know, relevant questions about it. So it's not been the soundbite kind of interviews, which drive me crazy and I'm not terribly good at.
Well, congratulations on your film, and thank you.
Thanks so much. Really nice talking to you.
If you're just joining us, we're at the Toronto International Film Festival, where I interviewed director Tony Goldwyn. He mentioned that he had skipped out early from the Fox Searchlight party the night before because it was so insanely loud. That made conversation extremely difficult. I know. I was there. I was a little baffled by the loud music at all the parties I attended. I guess it was festive, but obviously business was being done, and it didn't seem helpful to make it almost impossible to hear or be heard. What's clear is that if you want to network, it's best to get invited to a dinner where it's possible to mingle, sit, and talk. One excellent example is the dinner hosted by Sony Pictures Classics. It's closed to all except Sony executives, the filmmakers and actors who worked on the movies that the company is unveiling at the festivals, and members of the press. It was a sit-down dinner, and I was assigned to a table for the British movie Made in Dagenham, which tells a true story about women assembly line workers facing discrimination at a Ford factory in the 1960s. It stars Sally Hawkins as an English Norma Rae.
This needs a leader.
Right.
To inspire the girls.
We got to demand pay which reflects the job you do, not whether you've got a f*** or not.
At the Sony Pictures Classics dinner party, I took time to chat with the director of Made in Dagenham, Nigel Cole. I asked him what he thought about working the festival circuit.
In 2000, I was a TV director in the UK and made a TV movie that got selected for Sundance. And I went to the Sundance Film Festival, really never having been to a film festival before in my life, not really knowing anything about it. I'd been to the Edinburgh Fringe and directed plays there. I thought it'd be a bit like that. I'd be out on the streets with flyers trying to persuade people to come and see my movie. And I arrived to find there was a fight going on outside the movie theatre because they'd oversold the tickets. And by the end of the evening, we'd sold the movie to Fine Line for $5 million. And that I was a movie director and kind of famous. And literally overnight in Sundance, I went from being relatively unsuccessful to being really quite successful. And so film festivals have always kind of had a special place for me because one changed my life.
Now, your picture is being distributed by Sony Pictures Classics. I'm sorry, I don't know. Is your film screened here yet?
It's screening now as we speak. Just 45 minutes ago, the world premiere began at the big theater. And I went on stage and introduced it, and the movie started. And I guess they're three quarters of the way through now, or something like that. So we're sitting here, I'm drinking whiskey, trying to calm my nerves, waiting for that first kind of reaction to it.
And you're not in the theater waiting to see it?
Weirdly, you'd think I would be, but I have seen the film several hundred times, so I don't really need to see it. I've seen it with audiences a lot, in test screenings and other screenings. But this is its official birth, its official launch day is today. And so we're here at this big dinner to kind of, you know, meet a lot of journalists and talk about it and, you know, generally.
And here we are, yeah. So how did it happen that you do come here, and what do you expect to find when you get here? And has that changed since, you know, the environment has gotten so tough for independent film?
Well, I get sent here to promote a movie. I mean, I've only ever been because a distributor or studio has paid for me to come. I mean, no, I don't get paid to do it, but which I wish I did, but, you know, buys me an airline ticket and puts me up at the Four Seasons. And I always arrive and I have a whirlwind schedule of interviews and Q&As and introducing the movie. One of the great tragedies is I never get to really experience a film festival because I'm too busy being part of it, you know, kind of being on stage and talking about my film and kind of doing press and stuff. So, but it's fun for me because it's film festivals are very director friendly.
Yeah, I noticed there are thunderous standing ovations for the films that I've seen so far.
Well, they kind of like directors, like filmmakers. Film festivals about filmmakers. And it's the one time when directors get to feel a little bit like they're movie stars too. Because you get, like you are now, you get interviewed. And people come and ask you stuff about your work. And people take photographs of you and you walk up red carpets and people point at you. And that's the only time that ever happens. The rest of my life, I walk around entirely anonymous.
So when you were here last time, was it, how long ago was that?
I was here 2 years ago. I came here with a film called $5 a Day that I already knew was in deep, deep trouble. And so it was a weird experience for me. I was in deep trouble because it was financed by Capital Films, who were, you know, clearly heading for bankruptcy, if not jail. And your man, David Bergstein, who ran it, you know, I think...
Yes, we've talked about him quite a lot on our show.
Yeah, I worked for him, and I made $5 a day for him, and by the time
literally.
Yeah, literally, and had the most bizarre experience of my life. And one day, I may well write a book about it because he was one of the most extraordinary characters I ever met in this industry.
Coming up after a short break, more with director Nigel Cole at the Toronto International Film Festival. Have you ever networked successfully at a film festival? Go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and kcrw.com. Business, and I'm Kim Masters. This year, when I was at the Toronto Film Festival, I met director Nigel Cole in town for the world premiere of his new movie, Made in Dagenham. The film is based on a true story about women working at the Ford factory in Dagenham, England in the 1960s, and their fight to get equal pay for equal work. Cole's film was having its international premiere as he sipped whiskey at the Sony Pictures Classics dinner. I asked him how his experience at the Toronto Film Festival this year compared with his previous experience 2 years earlier. At that time, he was promoting a film called $5 a Day, financed by the now-notorious money man, David Bergstein, who's littered Hollywood with a trail of unpaid bills.
And we used to joke about how he was probably in Las Vegas gambling the budget away, and it turned out he was. And so by the time that film was finished, it was effectively in the middle of this giant legal dispute. There was a huge debate as to who owned it, and I knew that the chances of being released were very poor because of that, and that's the way it's turned out, I'm afraid.
So with all the bills that notoriously went unpaid with David Bergstein, Did you come here and find that you had a hotel room and a place? I mean, did he actually do what he was meant to do then, or when did you know you were in trouble, I guess?
It was strange because I got paid by Bergstein, and I was one of the very few people who did. My very first experience of him was the weirdest. When I was talking about maybe doing the film, he flew me over from London to Los Angeles, first class on British Airways. It's one of the very few times I've been first class on BA. You could buy a house for what that costs. You really could. And he put me up at some swanky hotel in LA. And I thought, I like this guy. You know, this guy's treating me well. This guy's obviously got money. And I went to his office for the meeting that I'd been flown over for at 11 o'clock in the morning. And 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was still sitting in the lobby waiting for him to turn up. And his staff were running around going, we don't know where he is. And eventually his assistant came out and said, I've just found out he's in India. So I went back to my hotel room. Nobody called me. And so the next day I went home.
That was it. You didn't even meet him.
I reckon that whole trip must have cost $25,000 or something. So I knew from the word go that there was something wrong, something odd. But it's very hard to get small independent films made. If someone says, I'm going to pay for it, you go, okay, that's good. I'll take that, you know.
I imagine you feel a little bit better with Sony Pictures Classics handling this one.
It was one of the best pieces of news I've ever had in my life when Sony Pictures picked up this film.
Well, thank you so much. Good luck with the film.
Pleasure. And $5 a Day did come out on DVD and is available now.
We'll stick it in our Netflix queue.
I should mention that while Cole claimed he didn't mind missing the premiere of his new film, Made in Dagenham, where he could easily have enjoyed a standing ovation, he did mind. It turns out Sony Pictures Classics wanted him at the dinner to meet reporters like me, but during the meal, he was checking Twitter a lot, looking for some early reviews. Seated on my right at that dinner was Brad Pellman, co-president of Maple Pictures, the Canadian distributor for Made in Dagenham. He told me that when his company first invested in the film, it had a very different name.
This film was originally titled We Want Sex. And there's a pivotal part in the film where the girls, they're out picketing. And in essence, they pull out this banner. And in unfurling the banner, it stops in a very large crowded square where it simply says, We Want Sex. And after they unfurrow it a little more, it's We Want Sexual Equality is what it says.
But
from that moment in time, which is obviously right in the middle of the film, at the height of the labor dispute, everybody gloms on to the fact that they want sex. And that was the originality of the title.
And you like that title.
I do like that title.
But
I think marketing... Canada's a different situation. We aren't going to have that much of a difficulty, but our friends at Sony Classics are going to have a hard time getting over the title because in the U.S., communities in the U.K., like Dagenham, are simply not known. So people are going to look at that title and not really know what the movie's about. We Want Sex gives you at least an opportunity to get over the hump and create a curiosity value.
So to speak.
Exactly. Get over the hump, so to speak, to create the curiosity value of what is really a good adult-oriented night of entertainment.
So who decides to change the name?
I think it's a collaborative. I didn't really talk to Michael or Tom directly about the title change.
Michael Barker and Tom Bernard of Sony Pictures Classics.
Who do have a lot of say when they come into the North American marketing fray, because they are going to invest a lot of money and time and effort to position the film. Canada, I'll draft on what they're going to do, but our job is really to maximize the Canadian marketplace, and I'm not going to title the film We Want Sex Here if they're going to go with Made in Dagenham down there.
Why?
It's about scale. I don't really want to duplicate marketing materials and DLTs and physical film elements.
DLTs?
DLTs is the digital linear tape that creates the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that comes after the theatrical release. But
right.
Once you've titled it, and once the film is known, and once you go into the film festival with it, kind of hard to look in the rearview mirror and make changes.
So we called Tom Bernard, co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, to get his take. Which title would work better in the U.S.? We Want Sex or Made in Dagenham? His company bought the film in March and found that the British filmmakers were concerned that Americans wouldn't have a clue what Dagenham is.
And so they made up a title called We Want Sex. And we said, well, when we're through marketing the movie, people will know what Made in Dagenham means. And we want to keep the same title in sync with the British title because, just for one, we feel this movie's going to be an awards consideration film, and we think that Sally Hawkins, the star, has got a great shot at some awards, year-end awards and nominations as an actress. And she certainly got a big shot at them in the BAFTAs. And the BAFTA voting members are certainly intermixed with all of the American audience. So there's a number of Americans that are BAFTA members, and so they would be getting a movie called Made in Dagenham for their consideration in England and We Want Sex for their consideration in the States. That, for one, didn't make any sense, and for two, the movie's not about We Want Sex.
Darn it.
It's a movie about empowered women who changed the whole pay scale at the Dagenham Ford plant in the late 60s in Dagenham, England.
Now, we interviewed the Maple Pictures Company co-president.
Mm-hmm.
They're worried that people in the U.S. won't know. And I have to correct you. It's Dagenham.
Yeah.
We were told not to say Dagenham. It's Dagenham.
Well, we can say Dagenham in the States. It's okay.
Do you worry that American audiences will go, what's that?
Well, I'll tell you. We had a movie called Capote. You know, it's about Truman Capote. It's a movie about what he wrote in Cold Blood. And we had to put a whole primer in the press kit for critics and many people to try and let them know who Truman Capote was, because they'd either forgotten or were just unaware of who he was. And a lot of people thought Capote could have been a candy, a town. It didn't matter, but
you're telling me there are film critics who thought that? That's the most depressing thing I've heard so far.
it happened. It was shocking. But people just associated Capote with a really good movie that starred Philip Seymour Hoffman. And I think when you brand a movie and you can brand it into the zeitgeist, the title sort of disappears and it means this is a good movie, we should go see it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than you go see a movie based on the title. There may be a title that's inappropriate that turns you off, like We Want Sex. But I think when the movie opens in November, you will certainly not hear the title as anything different in your vocabulary. And what you'll hopefully hear is, hey, this is a really good movie about women's empowerment. I really have to see it.
Tom Bernard is co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, a film production and distribution company that had 10 films at the Toronto Film Festival this year, including Barney's Version, Inside Job, and Made in Dagenham. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the executive producer. The theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. To leave a comment about today's show, email us at thebusiness@kcrw.org or go to kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can also stream and podcast the show and check out past episodes. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.